Hi, this is Doug Bledgy. You're listening to Lost and Rewound on Radio Free Brooklyn. Time to get embarrassed with us.
This is Lost and Rewound.
We've made it all the way down to the show.
This is the show.
Oi.
Where we talk about the tapes.
Oh, we've got tapes from the past.
So much past.
Oh, it's like earlier than yesterday.
Earlier than yesterday and the day before.
And we'll stop with these accents now.
Yeah. It's okay. Something for your reel, right?
Yeah, you know. We're all you guys out there in Edinburgh. We're butchering your accents here in a basement in Bushwick.
We are your purveyors of audio artifacts from the yesteryears, specifically that of cassette tapes, if you can help it. But if not, hey, we're always happy to take your creative ideas at lostandrewound@gmail.com.
Yeah, if you do happen to have one of those old discs that was created by, I think, Thomas Edison, and they were made out of like wax, and you put it through a thing and it would spin, and there'd be a little spindle inside that would read the sound. If you have any of those... We also want that recording.
Exactly.
Or anything from the past.
Those who are familiar with our archives know that we've had a varying amount of submissions, so sincerely grateful to those who have submitted, and we are very excited for all the new submissions we have coming up. If you want to donate to Radio Free Brooklyn, by all means, that will help our cause greatly. RadioFreeBrooklyn.com/pledge is the link to our Patreon page.
Yes, that's right. This is, again, free-form radio, and it is commercial-free.
Commercial-free.
Commercial-free. So I'm not telling you all about how great Snapple is right now and how delicious Subway sandwiches
can be. I can't even remember the last time I drank a Snapple.
I'm just thinking of the most product-placed products I could think of. You know, I'm always, Snapple is always in something.
It's a good one.
I found out recently, juice is just as bad as soda. But anyway, on another note, if you want to help us here at the station, again, you can donate. That's, again, radiofreebrooklyn.com/pledge, or you can donate directly to our show, radiofreebrooklyn.com/LAR.
Don't you want to be a sponsor? You know you want to. For $1, you could be giving us a little bit of love.
You know, I'm telling you, the more that you sponsor, the closer you're going to get to dunking. You're going to get those ups.
Uh-huh.
It's going to happen.
Yes.
You're going to feel you're going to feel all inside.
You're ready to begin?
Oh, I'm more than ready.
Let's do it. Ryan Parker is a jazz-influenced multi-instrumentalist, composer, and vocalist based out in Brooklyn.
He could be seen locally around open mics and shows as far as Fort Greene, Park Slope,
Harlem.
All around this great place. Welcome, Ryan Parker. Very, very classy individual,
and evidently my twin, according to Jimmy Jams here.
They are very, very similar looking people in the studio right now.
We're both sporting wedding bands. We both have beards, and we both have the signs of a haircut that needs to be fixed.
Cleaned up a little bit.
Yep.
I wonder, what would be the best use of you guys being twins? Like, could we go somewhere? Could we like, pull pranks and stuff like that?
Actually, has anybody ever told you that you look like someone they know, and have you been like, who is this person? I think I have to scout out my twin.
Well, yeah, that's always a funny thing. I think there's like a comedian that does a bit about that. It's like, hey, I know somebody who looks a lot like you. It's like, yeah, okay, there's a lot of people walking around look like white guy with a beard, and, you know, fucking Brooklyn.
It's Brooklyn.
Hipster yuppie. Like,
exactly.
Come on. I mean,
the old doppelganger.
All us white folks look the same.
Yeah. Did you ever have like a classic celebrity people would say you
yes.
look like?
Yes. Oh, God. Yeah. Well,
bearded Greg Kinnear.
It depends on, well, and I'm a teacher too, so, you know, like, I get different generations referring me to different things. One of my collaborators, who we're going to listen to later, his mom used to call me Sting all the time because she thought
I could see
like
that
Sting.
I can see that.
And then I had my cousin, who's like 10 years older than me. She thought I looked like, what's his face? Oh, my God. He has the movie about the radio, pirate radio.
You're talking about Christian Slater?
Christian Slater.
I
yeah,
can see
I
that.
Could see that.
Yeah,
too.
I got the, see that too. I got the like Dracula receding hairline thing. Perpetual.
But do you have the Slater intensity?
The Slater intensity, bro.
So you teach music now. How long have you been teaching music for?
It's been my focus for about 7 years, I think.
It's been your focus for 7 years,
yeah.
But you still get a chance to bring your guitar into radio shows all across Brooklyn.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was always teaching a little bit, you know. I was a manny, a babysitter.
You would be.
I mean, I liked working with kids. I was one of those kids in class where the teacher would, like, assign me to other kids to help them. So I've always been doing that. My mother was a second grade teacher. My father was an art teacher at a high school. My grandmother was a teacher.
So education
teacher.
Is in your blood.
Kind of in the blood.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, but I only actually got certified to teach in public schools about 6 or 7 years ago.
Cool.
And I was doing it in the schools for about 4 or 5 years. And for the past 2 years, I've just been doing my own business.
Make more money that way, right?
Nah, yeah.
You got to build. You got to build the clientele.
Yeah. It can take a time, and you can be stubborn and stupid about it, like some of us are when we first start our businesses. But like I said, I have other things I can freelance and fall back on. I can make a little money performing. I can make a little money dog walking, babysitting, whatever.
Dude, dog walking in Brooklyn is lucrativo.
Yes, and if you love dogs like me, but you can't have one, it's kind
what?
Of perfect.
Okay, there is something that clearly is not like there is a little bit of twinsies
there,
going on here, but not with the dogs.
There goes the difference. Okay. Therein lies the difference. If you didn't know, Alon has how many pets?
Let's not go there.
this dude runs the, you know, Brooklyn Zoo.
It is the Brooklyn Zoo. All right. But I'm curious.
He's like he's ODB.
Wait, so
of the North Slope.
Brooklyn, shame on you. Ryan, then your landlord doesn't allow pets in your apartment?
Yeah, it's rough.
Bullshit.
It's rough.
Bullshit.
I have two cats and occasional roaches and rats. But
they don't count. The cats, yeah. Those are the cats' pets.
Cats, yeah, exactly.
I had a similar thing where I couldn't have a dog growing up. I always wanted a dog. I couldn't have a dog. I had one Russian landlord growing up. He was like, no dog. And I just didn't want to test that.
Right. We have been in the same apartment for 10 years.
That's a long time.
Yeah. And it was like one of the first places that we saw. And obviously we're happy with the landlord. The landlord's happy with us. It's that one thing, the not having a dog is just like, okay. We'll deal, because there's no way we could afford our neighborhood anymore if it weren't for my wonderful landlords.
When did you move to Brooklyn?
2006? Yeah, 2006.
Oh, okay.
2006.
Yeah. It's around the same time as me. Where are you from originally?
Boston, and outside Boston, yeah. Suburban Boston.
Did you come to visit New York a lot when you were in your college days just
to
play gigs?
Absolutely. And I actually have family in New York, like going super far back, supposedly I'm related to Walt Whitman. And
I see that too.
You can't see it on the radio, but there was some nails being filed on the chest. real subtly.
I'm like that old school Brooklyn. Like, people talk about, you know, the old school.
I go
back to the colonial days.
So
my family been here.
No question.
Long
question.
Before you, I gentrified this stuff.
But
straight out of Stuyvesant.
Did Whitman have any kids, though?
Because no, he was super gay.
He was gay.
Yeah.
I was thinking, like, Whitman was like, he was like the old classic gayest poet of Brooklyn.
Yeah. No, but he's like a cousin or a great 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 uncle or something.
Yeah, yeah.
The Coffin family. His mother.
That's the nature of New York, though. People being related to older people, because people just come and they congregate here in New York City. Like I knew a guy growing up that was related to Aaron Burr.
Yeah, right.
And now with, you know, Hamilton and stuff.
Yeah,
even more hated.
When you first got to New York to play shows, what kind of setup was your music in? Was it a full band, or was it mostly just you and a guitar?
I guess a mixture.
You play a lot of instruments. Let's just get that out of the way. Up top, I said multi-instrumentalist.
Not true.
To be vague about it, but you officially have talents in at least an entire band's worth of instruments.
Yeah.
On some Dave Grohl type shit.
We'll hear that. Yeah. I mean, you know, when you can't make friends and you just lock yourself alone in your basement, you can only play with yourself because you've alienated all the other musicians in your little town. So you learn how to play all the instruments so you don't have to actually deal with other people's egos.
I hear you. See, that's the thing is that when you're that kind of person and you don't have any musical talent, then you just play with your skin flute.
There's that. So,
bust out a tune.
Did you have any siblings?
I did.
Do you have any siblings?
Yes, I did.
They are not around anymore.
No, yeah, that would be a very different story.
But did they play music?
Yeah, you know, they would all say that none of them are musical or whatever, but that's just because our culture is strange about arts and music. My sister sings beautifully, and her daughter is like 3. Gosh, I hope I have that right. my beautiful niece, who I love so much, is very young, and 2 or 3, and she's already singing pretty nicely for a little kid because my sister can sing very well and has a good ear, and her husband, who also would say he doesn't have any musical skills or whatever, but he's got a good ear. He loves Radiohead and all sorts of good stuff.
What would you say is your favorite instrument to play, or what instrument would you say are you best at?
That's been a hard question to answer since I was a teenager. The drums are the most fun. I mean, come on.
Why?
I always see the smile on your face when you're playing drums. Yeah. I've only witnessed him playing drums and guitar.
Okay. Yeah.
But he seems like he's always like, he's just in his element when he's playing drums.
I love playing the drums. I think it was also therapeutic for me. You know, obviously I was playing in bands all throughout growing up. When we would rehearse and there'd be downtime, other guys might, you know, go play video games, or we'd skateboard or play basketball or whatever you did. Eventually, you know, I might smoke some weed or something. But I often, while they were off doing things, I would go to their instruments, you know. So I would be like practicing the drums when the drummer was eating lunch or something. So that was like sort of how it started happening. And then this little weird, we had aborted recording studio projects, and in which I had to sort of step up to the plate. We had prepared material with the band, and then the band broke up right before we had the recording gig booked. And that happened twice, like 2 years in a row. So that's actually how I got better at the drums. But it was around the time, you know, angsty teenage years. It's good to have something to hit.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Get those forearms going.
Oh, it's so satisfying.
I know he does the jazz drumming, but man, if you'd done death metal, you'd have them double basses. There's something about that. It's just so intense.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The visceral feeling is awesome.
And there's that feeling of troops getting ready for battle. You know how they'd have.
Well, sure.
You know, and it keeps you, keeps spirits up.
That was also, I guess, around the time when I stopped playing organized sports. So that probably had something to do with it, too.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. I chose, like, drumming and music as my after-school activity more than the sports. They were sort of phasing out, even though I still love playing basketball.
Sure. I mean, I started learning to play guitar pretty later on in middle school, and I could have continued doing it, but I was too invested in acting and realized that I needed to make the call as to what I was going to focus more
right,
on.
Right.
And these fingers just weren't ready to be calloused, ready enough.
That's okay.
I had to focus on theater.
Sure. You know, I've been on a real Shakespeare kick lately. I don't know. I didn't get a lot of sleep, so there might be a lot of digressions here today.
No worries. We like to do the show in iambic pentameter.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Perfect.
One difference I find, I think, between people who choose the acting path and people who choose the music path, because it's coming from both sides of artistic and creative peoples, but I think there's an intrinsic difference between the two sides of it. And I think that musicians are sometimes more trying to express the inner emotions and trying to, like, bring out what they have inside, show what's inside, because they have a lot and they're really deep. Actors are more trying to relate what's outside of them and internalize what's outside of them, and then
I can see that. Yeah.
Show
yeah.
it again. Personally, I've always loved music, but I never felt that I could write music something was about that didn't have the emotional fortitude to do it.
Right.
Brooks and Ryan and I had a band without a drummer called Blank Illusion.
Blank Illusion.
It was like a band name that I created. We recorded 2 songs, one that I wrote And then we did a cover of Under the Bridge by the Chili Peppers.
Oh, nice. Great one.
And either of the two, either Ryan Reich or Brooks Rocco, who have been on the show before, may be able to provide us with that, if either of them haven't already burned that copy. Very righteously so, I might say.
But I was going to say, actually, now that I think about it, Zach might have that recording of Bear Cavalry somewhere.
Well, he better find
it. You want to know what's... But we have to definitely do a section of it, because it was a progressive metal band.
Yes.
So the song we recorded was 30 minutes long.
Of course. Naturally. That's awesome. I
want to bring it back to Ryan Parker. It must have been quite a big deal for you to come from out of the basement and onto a stage, you being such a wizard with the instrumentation. And then realizing that, oh, now I gotta like perform in front of other people. So talking about what Jimmy was saying before, did you like performing, or was it really more about being behind the sidelines with the music?
I think that's one I still struggle with. I think I'm more comfortable in the basement than I am on the stage. Although I can certainly, I've done it enough that I can fake and pretend to be very comfortable on stage. My mother always reminds me that I played at some like silly piano competition. By the way, music should never be competitive. Like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Well, that would mean that art shouldn't be competitive.
Well, sure, yeah. And that's like sort of my philosophy. It's whatever. It has its place. Anyways, but we don't need to get into my teaching philosophy. But the point is I was something, I don't know, like 4 or 5. And they paraded me out. I had like a number on me or something. And I played some classical piano. And it was like a room of like, you know, 1,000 people or something like that, or 3,000 people. It was a huge space.
Yeah. Where was this?
I don't know. I don't even
remember. Was it in Boston?
Yeah, I think it was in Boston.
Crazy.
I actually saw the footage of it.
I've never performed for that many people.
Yeah. I don't think I've performed for that many people since.
Since your piano recital when you were how old?
That was the highlight of my performing career, if you're looking numbers-wise, I guess.
Yeah, mine, I was 16, too. So what's the big deal?
Yeah.
You know, I had pimples when I was doing it.
No, yeah, I was probably like 5 or 6. I don't know.
That's crazy.
Anyways, my grandmother was like terrified for me. She had stage fright and anxiety, which was kind of strange because she was a badass. She was like, "How did you do that?" And I was like, "I like to play for the people. It's nice.
The nice people.
I like to play
for the
people.
They give me cookies. I play."
So my mother reminds me that I get down on it, and I'm like, I just want to help other people with their music. I don't want to work on my own stuff. I hate leading bands. There's a lot of aspects of it. I've gotten in my own way in like making my music and promoting it. And yeah, discovering home recording and multi-track recording was like a revelation.
There's a huge place for that.
Yeah.
You know? And that's a great thing, because and how many bands and how many musicians have the problem where everybody wants to be the front man. Everybody wants to be the main event. And it's like not only one person can be that.
That was my problem, being involved in any music project. I was going to be the front man because I didn't play an instrument.
Well, that was the same thing for me. I was the front man of my band. And the thing that was is that it was so short-lived, but they all collectively definitely did not want to be the front man. They were like, we don't want to be in the spotlight. Don't look at us. We just want to play.
Yeah.
And if we could not perform in front of people, it'd be better. But we do want to at the same time. It's a weird thing.
Yeah, I think it is common.
I think even in comedy, that's a thing too. There are a lot of people who want to be the ancillary characters, that want to be the bit players.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that say, I don't want to be the main character.
I want to be a character actor.
Honestly, I'll say it like this. I've had a thought in my mind of like, if I became successful, I was like, I might be happier as a character actor than as a main actor, because there's just a lot of pressure to be so relatable and all these other like things. You got to be in shape and you got to do all this stuff and you got to have the perfect teeth. And, you know, if you're a character actor, you can have some things that are problems there, because you say, you know what, I'm okay with them writing for me, or I'm okay with going along with the script and just doing it.
Tacking on what you were saying before, how do you measure success?
Oh, interesting. I guess I've always kind of said that just you're productive and that you like some of what you're doing, and that at least you have a little bit of interest and respect from some of your peers and colleagues. I've worked in projects where people are investing thousands of dollars in a band where like it's a small business. Crunching all the numbers, I've done plenty of pro bono projects. That's probably the majority of it, where it's just like a share. Nobody's in it for the money. But being able to manage that business side of things is a different set of skills, and it's not necessarily in my wheelhouse. I've always kind of enjoyed, especially in the past 15 years or 10 years, just letting someone else take the reins of leading the band, I guess, kind of thing, and then I force some of my musical personality into it.
You're in a band right now called Turnpike.
Yes, I'm in an alt country band. I call it my dad band. This is very dad friendly, and it's also the two of the guys in the band are dads.
So he's with and, Jeff Yaz. Right?
Jeff Yaz, yeah, and he's and the, some of the actually some of the lyrics and the framework is about like family and midlife crisis stuff and relationship stuff, and yeah, he's even written some songs about his kids and stuff. Anyways, it's like cute country stuff. Some of it's kind of dark too. Though, and the great thing is that we have half of the band coming from sort of the country folk bluegrass side of the scene that they're really into and they know very deeply, and I don't know that stuff very well. My dad does. I don't know that scene very well, so they're like educating me on that. But then the lead guitarist and myself come more from like a jazz, like conservatory jazz and classical background. The folk guys push us to be more bluegrassy and country. And like I said, we kind of force our more jazzy, experimental musical personalities into his songs and arrangements. And it's really fun. People have been seem to be liking it. We don't we need to get on the recording thing. But we do play every month at Freddy's. The last Thursday of the month, the series is called The Open Hydrant. And Jeff Yaz is the main host, and I help him out as well. I hosted that last night, actually.
Nice.
That's Freddy's Back Room, which is 17th Street and 5th Avenue, Park Slope, Brooklyn.
Great space. Cool.
Very nice.
Cool place.
Oh. Creepy, creepy videos.
I love it.
Super creepy. If you like
the weird vibe.
Yeah, if you like those videos, that'll make your stomach growl.
Yeah. You know, you have your guitar on you right now. I want to make a note that nobody but us in here in the studio can admire just what kind of setup we have going on at the moment. There is a large book of music. Jimmy's taking a photo of it right now. It'll be up on the website. There's tapes upon tapes. There's a record. There's a CD.
Oh, there's three records, yeah.
I guess what we'll do is let's do this. Let's listen to what you got on the guitar right now.
Okay,
and then after that, we'll take a quick break and go and listen to some of these delicious, delicious sounds from from your archives. Is there any intro? Is there any intro that we need for this song?
That's pretty self-explanatory. I'm mostly an instrumentalist, and I like instrumental music for the most part, and that's what I like to study, and I like helping people arrange their songs. But this is a song that I wrote. Here it goes.
Lost and Rewound.
Sounds from the street, singing breaks, screaming children as they play on the street, barking dogs, sounding car alarms, cutting through music that's meant to be danced to. I wish I'd recorded these sounds. I had chances to. I'm hearing it now, but I can't place your voice in this scene. Mm-hmm. sun may be rising, burning. I heard what you said, I know you're hurting. Tell me, have you been awake through the night? Anxiously thinking, I'm treading water all of this time. Now we are sinking. So I'm singing for you all the songs you've forgotten, some words I am faking, some lines I have lost them, the rhythms are shaking, the tempo's dragging, the phrases are meaningless, cliched and nagging, the melodies tremble and squeak, slide and shiver beneath them. The harmony can't be much simpler. I'll sing for you now, but I can't reach your ears through this dream.
Ryan Parker here on Lost and Rewound, Radio Free Brooklyn.
Ah, very, very nice.
We'll be back in a little bit, and we'll hear some more of older tape. By older, yeah. I mean younger.
Younger, Ryan.
We will transition from Ryan's, the creme de la Ryan, to the old-time creme.
Oh, yeah.
Radio Free Brooklyn. Parker's involvement for this week's edition of Lost and Rewound is decidedly that of ample variety, considering just how much audio he has to offer. He's here with us in the studio, and he has so much audio to the point where I'm almost concerned why we didn't allow for more time to listen to the music. But that said, tapes. I'm looking right now. We were saying this before. Jimmy, how much do you count there? Like, that's like 8-9 tapes right there?
That's 11. And if you count the ones 15. On the table, on 15 the table is 15.
Tapes. This is what I'm saying, folks. Bro. This is the creme de la creme, as said before. So, Ryan, then I have to ask, did you really enjoy using the tape medium?
Yeah, yeah. And I think that, a lot of our generation and maybe a little before and a little after, and I think now there is a little resurgence of interest in cassettes.
Well, there's the good feeling of when you push the button and it goes click.
Yeah.
That's why you do it.
There's that. There's the fact that you have to, like, queue up the songs, or that you have to listen to a whole A side or a whole B side. You don't like get to skip around. You kind of absorb an album the way you're supposed to, I guess. So when I discovered that, even before I got little 4-track multi, overdubbing equipment, we used like tricks. We're like hooking cassettes up to other cassette, like a boombox up to a receiver thingy, and figuring out ways to basically do this, like have like a radio show kind of thing where we're talking, playing music in the background,
yep.
Playing live. Yeah, it was just something we started doing with my friends, and we were really into comedy and like radio. And then, of course, we got really into lo-fi, indie rock music and other things, do-it-yourself kind of music stuff. And it was all, everybody was recording with cassettes.
Whereas I was doing my who knows what Danziger's Own was. out in Boston, Ryan Parker and his friends were creating music on their cassette tapes.
Yeah.
And I want to shift that focus to this first tape that we're going to be hearing a clip from. Well, it is a live show. You were in sixth grade, so you were in a band. And I didn't hear the whole thing, but just hearing the very little clip of it, I'm already completely baffled how the musicianship sounds.
Explain to us.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say.
What's the band's name?
Preface.
The band is called Falter.
Which we then amended to be called Falter, parentheses, is a band.
Because there was already another band named Falter?
Maybe. I don't even remember. I think we just had, I don't know, like I said, we had a goofy sense of humor. We liked, you know, Monty Python and Strange Things.
I love the track listing.
Dude, yeah, look at, I mean, this is...
Fine Sharpie.
You've got, like, Sharpie and fancy pens. I even have notes in here. This is so embarrassing.
No.
That's the whole point of
the
show.
Give it. I want to see. I want to read.
Oh, God.
The liner notes?
There's liner notes.
There's, like, liner notes.
Okay. It says, no, this is great. This was live at the Longfellow. Tell us about the Longfellow.
This was like a swimming tennis club, you know?
Like, I love it.
This was like,
Near the Longfellow Bridge.
I don't even remember.
I know the bridge.
No, we're not going there. Ryan, continue.
This is about me, man. This is about my life and my tapes.
It's funny, though, because he brought up the Longfellow last time. One of the last times.
I did a documentary about the bridge.
Oh, I can dig it.
Anyway.
So anyways, it was just this...
It's
not a gig. It was a party.
Gig, in parentheses, party.
Yeah.
June 26, 1994.
I'm sure somebody's parents maybe, like, owned the place or something, or, like, played a part in managing it. And I think they, like, took over this women's tennis club for a day and, like, had a whole bunch of middle schoolers running wild. I don't know why they would want to do that, but they were cool parents. You know, they were good people, and they let us set up in this huge open gym space and made a makeshift stage, and so we were rocking out inside, and kids would like filter in and out. We played for like stupidly long time.
You have liner notes for each song. You have a comment
that.
I won't but I just said
read some of the classics.
I only need to read the last thing on this at the very, very bottom. It says, thanks to Tim Wright for singing backing vocals and being the coolest guy I've ever met. Okay. And our families for being our roadies.
Yes.
And for letting us... That was in caps. And for letting us practice in their houses.
Yeah.
Put together by Ryan, smiley face. Songs with backing vocals, Tim Wright. Best part, if you hear the crowd screaming, ... you're, spelled Y-O-U-R, listening to the wrong tape.
Oh, man.
Let's take a listen to... What's the song you're listening to?
Oh, I think this is one of the first songs I wrote on the guitar after, picking up the guitar. I don't know.
We'll find out?
Yeah, I'll have to... I got to play it, and then I'll remember.
Let's take a listen.
Thank you.
prepubescent angst is strong with this one.
Sixth grade. But that's sixth grade, and like that's on par with a lot of high school bands. I mean, in terms of just like the way it sounds.
Sure.
The recording quality is just pure unadulterated 90s.
Yeah.
It definitely sounds bootleg recording.
Bootleg recording from then.
Grungy demo.
Oh, totally. I mean, we were all about Nirvana and Sonic Youth and Dinosaur Jr. And you can hear it. That's one of the, like I said, that's one of the first songs I ever wrote. And Jimmy and I were joking about how jaded and it's called Left Me Again. And like I had been dumped and left by so many girls by the time I was 12. Like, what? You're like already writing "Woe Is Me" songs. At 12?
Well, you were learning from the best musicians around. Who? That's all the best songs.
Yeah, most of this music is. It's either "Woe Is Me," it's "Unrequited Love," or "Celebrations of Love."
While we were listening to this song, you made a rather pointed commentary about the fact that the song didn't actually show up in the liner notes.
Right. So
it's funny to me.
As you were looking at this, I realized that this photocopied, awful quality, handwritten insert was made because some of our friends who were there were like, "Oh, you recorded that? I want that recording. That was awesome. We rocked out. We moshed, man." And we were like,
but
we played like 25, 30 songs or something. And so we cut it down to a lean, mean 15 mixture of covers and originals. But that song that we just played didn't actually make the cut.
That's so funny.
strictly Ryan Parker, 12-year-old B-side.
That was the B-side, yeah. That's not even the best.
We're not even talking about the best of Parker right now. No. This is the worst of Parker.
In fact, we could spend a lot of time just doing the worst stuff because that might be more fun. I mean, what's the tagline of the show again? Get embarrassed with me?
Yes.
Like yeah, I mean, listen, we're all imperfect. It shouldn't have to be beat upon the head that we definitely have modest beginnings, especially when we're musicians. And I don't know why I'm saying we. I'm not a musician. I've had certainly modest beginnings as a writer, for sure. I would have no problem bringing my old poems in here. Last week, we were chatting with Joy and friends about some journal entries that both Joy and I wrote, and never a dull moment in our past when we are coming up with stuff that reflects who we were, and that's the whole point.
Yeah.
I'm not to be self-aggrandizing, but there's definitely a connect the dots mentality. I mean, the fact that you're writing about anything that doesn't involve girls is impressive to me.
I was also saying while we were listening to it to Jimmy that now I hear this stuff and I hear it as like a teacher, and I'm thinking like, wow, these 12-year-old kids are pretty good. They got some of their stuff together. I know what kind of stuff I would make them work on and the criticisms I would give them, and I like to laugh at it because it's freaking funny.
I like how Alon says that we all came from humble beginnings, but I'm in humbleness right now. We may be on the radio, but I'm in the basement.
I'm pretty modest. I never wanted to be a rock star.
I'm not necessarily a modest mouse, but I'm definitely like a modest vermin.
Yeah. So anyway, so that was sixth grade, Ryan, and then we're gonna listen to the Falter demo.
Is the Falter demo. How many tracks are on this?
It's a three song demo.
This
was the actual recording studio. And they had like a little deal where they had their young like intern recording local bands on the cheap, and so we went in there and recorded three songs, and it was pretty silly, but it was pretty exciting too.
Why was it silly? You had recorded in a studio before, or was it your first time?
It was one of the first times, I would say.
How was that experience recording in a studio for the first time? Daunting.
I don't know. We were kids. Like, we thought we were invincible. We thought what we were doing was cool. But we also had a sense of humor about it. Like, the songs, I mean, if you look at some of the stuff.
Redshift, Turbo Super Song 82 Champion Edition. That sounds like a video game.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is super dope. Super dope.
Okay. Say it again. Turbo Super Song.
Turbo Super Song 82. 80. And then Roman numeral 2.
Yep.
Champion Edition.
Champion Edition.
And the lyrics, there's lyrics for that one.
I like your leather. I wish you'd wear it every day. We're going to rock your ass.
That's it. That's the whole song.
And then there's a song called The Love Boat. Which track are we listening to right now?
Well, we're going to listen to the actual sort of serious one, the first tune, Redshift.
You double dipped. You double dipped in my salsa? Oh!
My goodness.
Eighth grade rock and roll.
Dude, that's freaking polished.
Yeah, I was just thinking the leap from, I know the other one was live recording, this was studio, but right. But just the leap from one year to another. It was night and day.
I would have been bowing down to you when I was that age.
Well, and you did say some of this sounds like it could be like high school band, and people were pretty impressed.
We did win a battle of the bands, I hope.
We refused to do that.
Again, back to the whole music shouldn't be a competition.
Music isn't a competition. We weren't into that. We were just like, no, we're going to do it our way. We're going to do it. Yeah. You know, if people like us, they like us. If they don't, they don't.
Humanity is already
competition. We were more of that like indie punk DIY, like we have our style and we don't really care if people like it or not.
Amen.
For better or for worse. But anyways, yeah.
It was good.
But we were pretty rocking for little kids. So we would actually, as middle schoolers, we started playing at like high school parties with high school bands.
Nice. Getting the high school chicks in middle school?
Yeah, baby.
You know it.
Yeah, actually, that's
She could drive a car.
Funny. That's how I think the band broke up, was over a freaking high school girl.
Damn it.
Well, I was going to say, can you name a band that broke up? If it wasn't for a woman and it wasn't for the guy that wanted to be a front man, it wasn't the front man.
Religion.
Yeah, right.
What bands?
Can we please think about Fleetwood Mac in this situation? I mean, come on. Pink Floyd, Fleetwood Mac, the bands don't break up, but what ends up happening is that the bands sort of go off the rails because a band member will see a light. And that's all it takes. Ugh.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is something that I've always thought about similarly. Again, I don't know. I don't think I've mentioned this before on the air. Just this idea that when you're a musician, you know, you may have written your best music 20 years ago and you will get famous off that album. And then you'll go to shows and everyone will be like, play the old stuff, play the hits, play the hits.
But this is like playing competition with yourself.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, you may get really tired of playing that stuff, which I've seen. You've seen that so many musicians like, I hate that song. I played it 1,000 times.
Yeah.
But for comedy, that's not the case. Comedians just get better. And there's very few instances where you have a comic like George Carlin or someone where they have a bit that's so famous. But still people aren't coming and clamoring for the old material. Yeah. They'll come and put on the old album.
Yeah,
but they're never going to ask you to play the new stuff.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And your delivery is only going to get better. Now, I can say that as a musician, chances are your musicianship is going to get better.
Hopefully.
But writing a great song is serendipitous. It's not necessarily it doesn't just happen because you're a great musician.
Right.
You know, and as a great comedian, chances are you should be able to write a good joke.
Yeah, and you got to work at it. It's a process.
We were talking about the liner notes for this demo that we just heard. I thought it was really funny that you had said Howie plays guitar and Ryan plays guitar, the big one, on Super Song 80. But even better, please write to us at – and then you listed three different addresses,
yes,
of which clearly were the members of the band.
Yeah.
But it's the subjects – it's the address to Falter, parentheses, is a band, and then Falter, just plain Howie, between both you and, I guess,
the
bassist. And then the drummer's address is Kill Drummers Society.
Yeah.
What?
So it was just like a running joke. What do you call the guy that hangs out with the musicians? The drummer. There's so many like drummer jokes. And it's like, how do you get a guitarist to shut up and stop noodling around, put sheet music in front of him? We had these running jokes. Brian had a good sense of humor, and he would also be like self-deprecating, be like, I'm just the drummer. Like, come on, you know. Guys, it's not like I need to show up to rehearsal. I'm just keeping the beat,
yeah, guys.
And so, like, we had this running gag that he was a drummer that hated being a drummer. So the Kill Drummers Society, he was the captain and the president of that fan club.
I want drumming vocalists to come back.
I'm working on it, buddy.
Yeah, man.
Which brings us to our next clip that we have from you.
Yeah.
And when was it recorded?
This band was prepared to record again in like ninth grade or whatever, or at the end of eighth grade.
Okay, so this managed to go throughout all of middle school,
right. So, but right before we were supposed to record a full album, and we had like two albums worth of material, and we had been rehearsing it, and we had these songs, and we got way better, and then we broke up like a month or two before we were supposed to go into the studio in Pennsylvania. The bassist and I were like, okay, I guess it's just going to be me and you, and rather than, like, butcher the Falter songs, let's just mess around and have fun. And so we recorded an EP of songs that we wrote in the studio
in the car on the way to Pennsylvania, the absurdity comes to a whole nother level, which was already present as part of our Falter stuff. But Falter started to get like serious and artsy, hardcore-y, and progressive rocky. And this was Hucardio Fnux, which is a line from a Dr. Seuss story, little known one called The Grinch Who Stole Christmas. And he's talking about the big annoying instrument that makes lots of noises and everybody's riding on it or something. It's like a bike or something. Anyway.
You notice that there's no Grinch that cares about Hanukkah.
Yeah, come on, man.
He could give a shit about Hanukkah.
Yeah. So anyways, so that was the clever name we came up with, Hucardio Fnux. And it has some irreverence to it. So I think I have queued up one of the three songs we recorded on a Star Wars theme, which I thought Jimmy might appreciate.
For sure.
This is sort of our faux punk song. And play it and we'll talk
about it. And you're playing how many instruments here?
So with this one, I think I'm playing guitars and drums, and I think we're both singing.
And this was recorded in what year?
It was either 8th grade or 9th grade. So this would be 1995? 4?
It's amazing. Let's give it a hear, yeah?
Yeah, play all that right. Funky music.
Yes.
Right, boy, you will.
I'm ready.
Was the Force with you on that one?
Yeah, that was our punk rock parody of John Wayne and joining the Star Wars universe for some reason.
John Wayne in space.
Yeah, like I think we had just seen Westworld, which I don't know, spoilers, I've not seen the show yet.
Oh,
but we watch, saw the original
movie. The original is really
so
cheesy and weird.
Yeah.
And I love Yul Brynner. I love Yul Brynner.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We were into like Manor Astroman and Mystery Science Theater and all this kind of like B movie, sci fi horror stuff. But we were also, you know, we liked Star Wars like any red-blooded young boy. And maybe a little bit of, you know, John Wayne, like country stuff. Like I said, this was all recorded and written in like a few days. So we were just having fun with it. So that's kind of like a parody of the punk bands we were listening to at the time. The Queer Screeching Weasel. Oh, Showcase Showdown, one of the best punk bands in Boston at the time.
So you were into a lot of punk, and you were all about going to the punk shows back then.
Yeah, and that was sort of like the aesthetic and the community that I really loved, and it's sort of what's brought me back to like the open mic scene, which I wasn't really into, but I love that kind of sense of community and DIY and people helping each other out. Again, music not as competition, but like a community of musicians and songwriters like helping each other promote their stuff, booking shows together. That, I loved the sense of community and help that everybody had a fanzine that they would review your tape in. Somebody would do artwork for you, and you just, like, barter and trade skills and things. I loved that about the punk and hardcore scene. But we also had, again, we had to have a little tongue-in-cheek fun with it, so.
The way to be. We got another one though, right?
Yeah.
Let's throw it on.
This is more of you playing all instruments. In fact, you are legitimately the only
the
person
whole
playing.
Band, yeah. Now, several Ryans.
What inspired you to write the song that we were about to listen to?
Oh, good Lord, I have no idea. This is when it's starting to get like abstract and artsy. This is kind of going to come out of the blue. Like I said, I was into a lot of the artsy hardcore scene, Rodan, Juno 44, Crown Hate Ruin, bands that were mixing progressive rock and art rock and hardcore. In interesting ways to us, so you can hear me embracing dissonance and odd meters and other strange things.
What's the name of the song?
I don't remember. Oh, because it's called Untitled.
And we present to you Untitled. Holy shit, dude. You
rock and roll.
You are a fucking powerhouse. You are a tour de force. Or at least you continue to be a tour de force.
Yeah, I try. But I had a good friend from that era, and we were in our 20s and watching like an old video of us rocking out in middle school, and he was like, "You realize this was like the highlight of your life." He was like, "Everything since then has been downhill."
It's the nature of it. It's the nature of it, man.
But it's was hilarious.
This is truly remarkable, and I'm really glad that Jimmy reached out to you to come out and being on the show. Our gratitude to you, Ryan Parker, for bringing tapes live in the studio to play. Honestly, like a lot of the times we like to kind of be prepared for shows like this, but I am grateful that I get to be surprised along with Jimmy here with so much amazing tape that we have in front of us, and hopefully you'll be able to come back on to play even more.
Sure, if you want to have me, yeah.
Well, there's certainly more where this came from, so I'm always excited.
You got anything coming up?
Turnpike is the Open Hydrant is the name. It's called a monthly music series, the Open Hydrant, and that's last Thursday of the month at Freddy's Bar and Back Room, 17th and 5th Avenue in Brooklyn. I co-host that, and Turnpike plays every month. That's basically it. I don't like to promote everything I do. I do too much.
Where can people find you on the website or social media?
Oh, yeah. They could turnpike.band, paradegroundsmusic.com. That was a rock band that my buddies were in that I was in for a while. Soundcloud.com/rhinoceri. That's
cool.
Rhinoceri as in the plural for rhinoceros, where you could hear that another version of the song I performed today. And then if you want to take some music lessons or pick my brain about music, ryanparkermusicteacher.com. The website's down right now, but it's going to be up and better in a moment.
Ryan Parker on Lost and Rewound. Thanks so much for being here, man.
Thank you guys for
coming out,
me.
Man.
And thank you to all our listeners or listener, whoever you may be.
Hi, Mom.
We're all over the place on your internet, the SoundCloud, Audioboom, iTunes, Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr. Lost and Rewound everywhere.
Every Thursday at 3 p.m. right here on Radio Free Brooklyn. You can send your submissions to lostandrewound@gmail.com.
We invite you to come get embarrassed with us next week. Take care.
Fudge. Pick up my vibrations, baby.
That's what I tell all the ladies.
Oh.
Pick up them vibrations, baby.